The 1895 podcast is brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. The 1895, the official Shelburne podcast, exclusive to Patreon.
Ball sinks in towards where Davy Rogers is up. Rogers sweeps the left. Oh, Davy Rogers! Oh, what a goal by Davy Rogers!
I'm angry, Tony, I have to be honest.
Murray! Martin Shelburne! Noel Murray! Has she won it for the Reds? What a goal!
Here's a chance up! Shane Farrell! And Chelsea 2-0!
I'm sorry, Tony, but I'm angry as well. I was angry before the game. I've been angry for a long time.
And she gets the winning goal here. Slattery! Oh. Into the back of the net! That is what champions do! That is what winners do! Pearl Slattery!
Over the top by Sullivan. Hughes! Goal! Shelburne lead!
His cross sticks the biggest!
Kilduffy is the substitute and he scored! Shell's lead!
We are in to the 94th minute
and yeah! It's an over! Shelburne FC are first division champions!
It's our just reward. We deserve this big time.
Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. And as always, we're brought to you in association with our proud media partners, Off the Ball. A lot has happened since we were with you last. There's been takeovers, thunderstorms, tough goodbyes and texts. But we are back and to talk us through all the action. Darren Cleary, Dazzler, what's the story?
A lot has happened at Shelburne Football Club. One normal day, that is all I ask.
And that's only the things we're allowed to talk about.
Everything is up for discussion. There's nothing off the table. Reds uncensored.
Yeah, absolutely. And also with us to talk through all the action, all of the above, backed by popular demand, the great Shauna Cook. Shauna, how are you?
I'm good. I thought you were going to say, speaking of uncensored, and introduce me there. So thanks very much.
We'll see how we go. Look, we're not short of talking points for the pod this week. Thank God, the listeners will be delighted to know. Just as a general club overview, I suppose we're probably best off starting with the... I don't know if we can call it it's a takeover, Dazzler, can we? You might know more of the ins and outs. We have a new majority stakeholder. I'm going to try this once after various Google Translates and YouTube videos. Ajun Ilajila is how you pronounce it, I believe. So, Dazzler, what do we know? What's the lay of the land at the moment?
That's a perfect pronunciation. Someone is doing his homework ahead of meeting the new boss in a few weeks' time.
Well, when I invited Shauna onto the podcast, she was more than happy to oblige, and she asked what we would be talking about so that she could prepare. Not something that's usually done for the 1895 podcast, Dazzler, it's fair to say. So I did a bit of prep myself because I said, look, I can't be letting the side down. So after numerous Googles and Google Translates and YouTube videos, that's the pronunciation I came up with. I won't be saying it again because I nailed it the first time. But anyway, continue. What do we know?
Yeah, it is he's become majority shareholder and chairman of the football club. Andrew Doyle, who had been the previous majority shareholder and chairman of the football club, is going to become vice chairman. It's a majority shareholding, but not, 99% or anything like it. It's an exciting time for Shelburne Football Club. I don't know much about him as a person, but as a businessman, he's been massively successful. It's his first kind of foray into football was with Hull, and he completely transformed that club. There's actually a lot of similarities between what Andrew Doyle did here in 2019 when he was coming in at a very bad time. The mood, the connection with the fan base, the board, they just weren't good at engaging with the fan base. They hadn't been able to really get energy back in the club. They'd struggled to put it back on a positive path. And then Andrew Doyle came in, brought the likes of Dave O'Connor in with him, some other brilliant people, and things changed. So he's done a similar job at Hull and spoken very highly of. So it's an exciting time for sure.
Sean, what did you make of the news when it broke?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of interesting things happening in the League of Ireland, and this was obviously a big headliner. I think Darren said it all there in terms of the work that's been done at Hull. And you know, for me, I'd probably be a little bit more cautious in you know, there's, we've seen kind of owners take over the likes of Waterford and other clubs, and you know, the effects that it's had down there. So I suppose for me, it's about like sitting back and seeing how it goes. Like, Duff has put together a fantastic team, the board have backed them, and the approach has gone really professional. You know, and I hope that can kind of filter into the women's side of things. I hope that, you know, this new majority shareholder can come in and see the opportunity in the women's game and push the club on, not just kind of push, you know, the men's team on, and everybody kind of is hitching their wagon to that. But look, it's great. It's good that the club and teams in Ireland are attracting that attention. And I just hope that you know, it'll help Shelburne push on to the heights we all want the club to achieve, and we feel like we deserve to achieve as fans of the team over the years through the hard times of the past.
Sean, you used the word cautious there. I would say that probably sums up how most people are feeling. Like, ultimately, when I heard it first, it was excitement. It was, oh, hopefully this can push us on to the next level. Duffer and Noel King, they're always talking about getting to the next level and pushing on and wanting to improve standards, all that type of stuff. And unfortunately, you need money for that. That's kind of the be-all, end-all of it. So hopefully from that end, it's all positive. The other thing that probably caught me by surprise a little bit, the outpour from Hull people about the new owner, I've never seen anything like it in football. They were just, he's like a god in Hull. Now, I know they were coming from the pits. I mean, they had an owner who wanted to change the name, wanted to change the kit. I mean, the fellow was a bit of a cowboy by all reports, but it's just a bit mad. It's one of those, he's probably just have to strap in and wait and see how things take shape. But it's, as you said there's been so much work in the last while of building the club, and it's been a club ethos. It's one club. There's no more this Shelburne ladies and the men's team. That's gone. I mean, the girls playing Tolkien now, we see the crowds and the atmosphere at those games on Saturdays has been massive. So hopefully the club moves in the one direction together. I think, Dazzler, that's probably the most important part for most supporters, I think, that we don't just throw loads of money at the first team and let's hope things work out.
No, because there's an unbelievable platform to grow, and the platform to grow is to continue and build on the work that's been done. Like, it's not by accident that the men's team and the women's team have both grown in tandem. Like, they both had similar opportunities, similar pushes. So it's really, really important that, you know, the focus of that isn't changed in any way. Like, I think Shauna's point is really, really on the money, because like, we've grown so much in the women's side of the game in the last 3-4 years. Like, Shauna, it's probably nearly unrecognizable in terms of some of the way it's the league is treated from even your playing days. And I think we should push on and not just accept that it's in a better place and that's good enough. We should want it to be better and want it to be bigger, because I think there's no better chance than now, and I think the interest is at its peak.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Darren. I think there's huge opportunity. Like, you're seeing, I mean, huge growth across the world and interest in the women's game. And I think there's a real opportunity here in Ireland. Like, we're seeing, even in the men's game, like, players going over to England that little bit older, which is great, because I think we're really getting to see the benefits of it, the clubs here in the leagues. It's adding to kind of strength and depth of the quality. And the next step is, how can we get them to stay? You know, rather than stay a bit longer, it's how can we get them to stay? I look back to days. I was only talking to someone about this the other day. Like, and I remember playing in the National League. Like, and I'm walking out alongside players, PMM, Karen Duggan, you know, Anya O'Gorman, and the likes of Rachel Graham, Noelle Murray, Leanne Kernan, and we're walking through the car park in the AUL to get to the pitch. Like, you know, it's little things like that were very frustrating. And that wasn't that long ago. We're talking 2017-ish, which isn't that far back in time, you know. And just like little things now, like, where, you know, the girls are turning up, you're seeing them in proper kit, getting food, you know, and we're at the stage now where people are going, that's normal. What, like, why is that a big deal? And I love that we're looking at the women's team now coming in and out of Talk. I love we're seeing fathers there with their sons on a Saturday afternoon. And it's kind of just that normalization of a footballer is a footballer, you know, it doesn't matter what sex they are. And, you know, at Shelbourne, I love the fact that as a club, we're trying to put in the work. We accept on and off the pitch that it's not perfect, but I just like the ambition that we have as a club in terms of where we want to go. And, you know, hopefully with these new owners in as well, we can kind of continue that journey forward. You look at the team we have now, it's probably the best we've had at Shelbourne in terms of the women's side since I've been around. And I just hope that we can kind of continue to grow it, because with the Champions League this year, there's such a huge opportunity, especially with the World Cup as well.
It's funny. I think this is an important point, and like, we probably missed it in everything else that happened over the last year, but the women's team saved Talca Park. Like, there's very little way of getting around or away from that. Like, when you look at the genesis of that Daly Mount deal, where that starts to wobble is, how do you have four first team in a ground? Like, it's impossible. And no one thought in any way, shape or form it'd be right or acceptable for either Bows to send their women up to the Oscar trainer or Shells to do the same in the AUL. So our commitment as a club to parity, to equality, to, you know, shared standards and access to resources is probably one of the reasons why the brakes went on that Daly Mount deal and a pivot towards, no, we're going to keep both their senior teams at Talca. We want to buy Talca as a football club. Like, it's when you look back on like pivotal moments in the history of the football club, and the women's team bought so much into it, more so than the men's team, because I think there probably was a fear around it where the likes of Pearl and Noel and others would have been happily embracing the Save Talca campaign. You know, Pearl was a speaker on one of their events in the Button Factory. Like, they saved Talca. So I think ensuring that there's more resources, more support available is paramount, you know.
And I think that went full circle. Sorry, Shauna. I think that went full circle. And I think the supporters bought into those players more after that as well. I think it became a thing of, hang on, they're in this just as much as we are in terms of wanting to stay in Talca. And they love playing in Talca just as much as we love going to watch football in Talca. So it's funny, the whole Save Talca Park campaign, I think it all germinated into the growth of that women's team within the club and the respect they've been given and the respect they've been earned. I think that they've earned. I think that's the important part. There was no token gestures with the whole surrounding of the women's team. It wasn't like, oh, we'll do this because, you know, it'll look good PR-wise that we're promoting the women's team. There was a genuine want and a hunger there in the club and the fan base to bring the women's team up and give them the credit that they deserve, give them the facilities they deserve. And look, they're probably bearing fruit of it now. Shauna, you probably would have more input on this as a player and having played for the club before. Like, do you look at it now, the situation it's in, and say, oh, geez, I wish I was playing now?
No. not from a point of view. I think, obviously, the team are fantastic, and I'm so proud of especially the older girls, Rachel, Noel, Pearl, for what they've given to the club, and just to see them going out week in, week out, and still excelling, being by their side through very hard times. But I say now because I enjoy eating lots of food and sitting watching television now. Football doesn't fit into that equation. But I think, like, Where it's come from, you know, I remember back then, 2016-17, you know, and we had the conversations about, you know, moving the women's team under the umbrella. You know, for me, there was a lot of people that had their knives out for me that were part of the women's section at that time, because I was obviously leading that campaign to move the women's team under the one umbrella. And, you know, by doing that, there was an awful lot of I'll say it, men losing out, and they were disappointed about it. But, you know, I knew that the women's team needed to be under the same umbrella as the men's team. It had to be one club, we needed the exposure, social media. We needed to try to generate a fan base. As a team, we deserve to be playing in Tulk Park, not doing the token games. I used to hate that, you know. It was nearly like a treat. Oh, you're going to play Piemont in Tulk once a year. But we needed to make it a home, somewhere where the girls could feel, you know, that they could turn up and they knew what the dressing room was like. They weren't walking through a car park speaking to friends and fathers and mothers on the way to and from the dressing room. And, you know, there was other components of that, having, you know, a kit deal with Umbro being considered, you know, in that, and trying to just bring it on. You know, for me at that stage, it was a difficult time. As I said, there was a lot of people that, you know, I ended up going through a bit of a stressful period myself, and I stepped away from football as a result. But I was very proud of myself and the girls for having the faith and backing me. You know, there was talk of at that stage, you know, management or people involved at the time taking players over to DLR, and, you know, there was going to be a bit of a revolt, but the players stuck with it. And, you know, I look at the moments last year when they're down in Wexford and Duff's watching them, and, you know, they're winning the league. And I just think, like, for what they've achieved and what they've been through, it's brilliant. And I agree with you, there's no tokenism. The one thing, you know, I suppose with Rovers now kind of hitting the accelerator, and you know, in fairness to Bowes, like, you know, they've piped down a little bit with all the bravado on social media, and they are starting to take it a little bit more seriously, from what I'm hearing behind the scenes. It's important that we as a club, you know, on the board, you know, we don't get caught kind of shining the tin pots, the trophies, and we're focused on the future and looking at how can we push on to that next level. How can we get through to the Champions League, you know, because the prize money is getting bigger and bigger, you know, like the club have a lot to gain from it. The one thing I will say about Tolga was, like, we're giving young females and young males around the area the opportunity and the visibility to dream and believe. I always say it, like, Tulk Park was my Wembley when I was a child, and I want to be able for kids around Ballybock and Coolock and Finglas and wherever around the north side to be able to go to Tulk and have that same feeling, and long may it continue.
Well, Sean, not to go down the route of I don't know, being over the top maybe, but you're speaking there about, you know, having Tulk was your Wembley when you were a kid. You should be given credit for the exposure that definitely the women's side of the game has gotten, because I didn't know the full story behind the transition to the one banner and all that kind of stuff. So you played a massive, massive part in that. So you should be very, very proud of your input that you've had, because you've single-handedly would be probably not fair on other people, but you've played such a massive part in the uptake of the women's football. So you should be very, very proud. Speaking of the future, trying to push on, Sean, you've mentioned the Champions League. It was dealt a little bit of a blow during the week with the news that Jessie Stapledon is going to move on. She's going to move on to West Ham. Probably for some people, it was the worst kept secret. certainly there was wind of it a good long time ago that it was supposed to happen. But how big a loss is it going to be for the girls?
Yeah, it'll be huge. Obviously, Jessie's a fantastic player. I think she probably is in the Guinness Book of Records for the most amount of positions she's played in the season. I think she's played everywhere but goalkeeper for Shells. She's been brilliant. Like, I remember our first game, I think our first touch of the ball, she lost it in Galway, scored in a friendly, and I look at how much she's grown since then, her maturity, you know, her ability to become a leader at our age. And I say this to her constantly, like, she's probably one of the players that goes under the radar to a degree that, like, we just expect her to be like a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10, how she performs every week. But look, if it wasn't West Ham, it'd be United or Chelsea or Arsenal, because she's that good. She's brilliant. It's disappointing from Michelle's point of view, probably more from the fact that, like, obviously the club aren't going to get anything out of it, because, you know, the way Jessie's moving over, the deal was done before all the professional contracts come in and whatnot, as far as I'm aware. But look, the nature of the club is, like, we always have that ambition to develop players, and it's always in the forefront of the thought in terms of the dressing room, the best players in that dressing room will always push on, and it's something that as a player, knowing what's happening in that dressing room, the players would have been aware of that. It's not just Jesse, but you know, you're looking at the younger ones now and probably going, they'll be off soon as well. And it's a credit to the club, you know, to Noel King and his management and the likes of Ken Kernan and the lads at the academy and what they're doing with these young players. But like, ideally, we'd love to get to a stage where the decision becomes harder for them to go over to England or stay here. And, you know, we can do that as a club, but we need the league to improve drastically and the FAI to, you know, put in place better structures and processes to support the clubs to be able to keep players here. But yeah, she'll be a big loss and she's going to be a big hole to fill for Noel and that. But life goes on, football moves on, and I can't let this moment pass without mentioning Noel Stapleton as well. My dad, he was always around the ground laughing and joking, and he'll be missed as well, sorely, I'd say.
Dazzler, it's one of those ones, isn't it? It's a bittersweet one. Like, when I found out about it, my first thought was, oh, shit, how are you going to replace her? But then, like, you quickly kind of turn to it, look, she's 18 years of age. I've personally never seen a player look so wise beyond their years. I would probably liken her a little bit, if you want to try and liken it to one of the men. So I'd probably at Gavin Molloy type thing of, could easily, if somebody told me she was 30 years of age, I wouldn't be surprised just by the way she plays and carries herself on the pitch. Like, how did the club go about even trying to replace her?
It's very difficult. Like, the nature of football is you'll find someone to play the jersey. You'll never really replace them. I think as a character, like, chatting to any of the players, any of the people around that team, they'll speak to the ability, and everyone will see the ability on a Saturday afternoon in Talca or around the country. But what you don't see behind the scenes is the humility, the work rate, the personality, because, you know, she's unbelievably well-liked, well-respected. Sean would probably speak more to that than I would, but it seems to be she was just a very, very positive force in a dressing room, and it's not often that your star players are also, you know, your behind the scenes, you know, your dressing room glue as well. So it's an unbelievably difficult player to replace, impossible in so many ways. Like, this is someone who's going to have the brightest of futures, a very, very long career in the game at the top level, and will probably be similar enough to the way Katie McCabe has kind of done it, I think, a bit of a breakthrough star in Ireland and the UK. Like, she's going to have such an amazing career. Like, the element that she deserves an incredible amount of credit for was there was an opportunity to obviously leave Shells at the end of last season and go to another club. I'm sure everyone listening will know what the other club was. A couple of players went there. They're new enough to the game, but wanted to stay. And at that age was cognizant of the legacy at Shells. And to be that self-aware at 18 years of age and to be thinking about your legacy as opposed to what you want to do for the next week or the next month just shows an amazing amount of humility and emotional intelligence. And I think the loyalty she has shown above all else is remarkable for someone so young. So, like, you're always sad to see players go. It's particularly frustrating when, to Shauna's point, you know, the club don't stand to benefit in any way financially, because the UK clubs will just come and cherry pick the best talent. They'll do nothing in developing them, and then, you know, they'll turn them into superstar factory. But yeah, she deserves an enormous amount of credit, and I think Shauna, maybe the loyalty, the aspect is one that will resonate well with Shells fans.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I said this a few weeks ago about, you know, we talk about as players winning trophies and medals and, you know, going on and representing your country, which is a great honour, but there's something to be said, and for me, I think there's no greater honour than, you know, when you become a real part of a club and, you know, you walk in there and people say things to you like, oh, Jays, I remember that time you could have gone to this club and you stayed, or, you know, that time, Jays, we were having an awful season and that one match, you know, that we were 2-0 down and you gave everything and won, you were brought back to 2-2 or 3-2. And you can actually feel, you know, that kind of connection with the people of the club, the fans, the volunteers. That's worth more than any trophy. You know, I love walking into Talca and connecting with people down there. And, you know, I know that, you know, people will remember Jessie for what she done on the pitch and what she gave, but people more so will remember the fact that there was clubs throwing everything in the kitchen sink at her to get her to go, and she chose to stay. And she'll go down as a legend of the club because she's been fantastic. And look, at 18 years of age, she's won everything here. You know, she's played the Champions League. This is the natural next step for her. It was always going to be the natural next step. It was just a matter of how long we'd hold on to her for. And we were lucky enough to be a part of our journey. And she texted me yesterday to say, hopefully, when we're both old and grey, we can come out of retirement and play in over 35's league in the future. But I just reminded her that I'm a fair bit past that now, so she might be wheeling me around the pitch as opposed to running beside me.
You know what, to think through this season, the level of performance she's kept up. She was sitting her leaving cert as well. It's been her leaving cert year, which is incredible. Probably shows the maturity as well, that she wanted to stay and get the exams behind her as well. It's probably, look, another sign of the character, I would have said.
Sorry, Darren, go on.
She's still sitting it. I think her last exam was today because we wanted to have her on the podcast with us.
Yeah, I didn't know whether I could mention that or not, but yeah, that's the only reason she's not here, actually, is because she is...
I'm second choice, am I?
No, definitely not. Darren was the second choice, so don't worry.
I'm sorry.
No, definitely not. But yeah, it's just incredible to think. I mean, how stressful a year that can be. You have to keep up the performances he kept up. Hopefully, I was speaking to Jessie myself during the week, and we are hoping to have her on before she moves across the water. Get that interview with her before she's super famous playing the Women's Super League. So that's the hope. Before we move on, speaking of moving away and trying to become super famous, Dazzler, the worst kept secret in Irish football last week that we couldn't officially mention was a certain Welsh goalkeeper moving to a villa in Spain. How was your week that week?
I can tell this story now. I was on holidays, and I was one day into the holiday, and I promised my new wife that I'm not going to do anything work-related, nothing related. I'm going to be completely switched off. We're going to have the nicest break in the world, detached from everything. I was on the second day of the holiday, and I had a missed call from Scott. And it'd be rare enough to get a missed call from someone on a Sunday from Shells. And I said, I'll leave it. And then I had another one. I said, Reggie's at the wheel. Give Reggie a text. And text back saying, no, it's kind of urgent. And at that point, if you do any kind of media and someone tells you they need to speak to you urgently, you wonder, has something terrible happened? And no, he said he was going on Love Island. And I was a bit surprised. But after thinking about it for 4 seconds, I understood why. And we managed to try and keep it under wraps until he told all his teammates, and then they told everyone else. So by then it was well known. But yeah, that was how the second day of my holiday went. Writing a press release planning for the departure of Scott, and then I texted the manager to get a quote from him, and he delivered probably the greatest press release quote I've ever read.
That line, I don't know what it was. I think it's from maybe dealing with the manager a little bit that you can actually just see him saying it with that sarcastic cut. I thought it was fantastic. But Sean, are you a Love Island connoisseur?
No, not at all. I wouldn't open up the curtains if they were filming in the front garden.
Now, I do have to admit, I did put it on the night he went in. It was like every night, Dazzler, I was keeping an eye on our group chat to see, because I know Owen Smith and Reggie are big Love Island fans. So I was keeping an eye to see if they mentioned them. Just, it's not every day you see a Shells goalkeeper on ITV in front of millions of people. So I did, I have to say, throw it on and seeing the first bit of them. So my own fiance Vanessa said he hasn't made a show of himself yet. So that's probably all you can ask for. Anyway, moving on to more important things. An important win for the Women's Premier Division side in the Avenir Cup on Saturday. It was comfortable enough in the end, you'd probably have to say. A 4-1 win in Lissy Wollin against Athlone. Shauna, what did you make of the game?
Yeah, as you said there, it was kind of expected. I mean, Athlone are struggling this year, and you know, Shells are picking up a bit of form, so it was, I kind of expected that result. And I mean, the weather as well was absolutely atrocious, which there was times where I was like, oh, could this kind of go in Athlone's advantage, you know, poor weather on an artificial surface. But there was enough experience on the pitch there to see the game out. And yeah, great start for them in this new competition.
Yeah, it's a professional performance. I probably would have put it down there. The one thing I do want to highlight, I'm fairly sure it was Megan Smith-Lynch's goal. The pass from Kiva Keenan was just an outrageous pass. It was outrageous. Defence splitter. It was off one touch as well, if I remember right. Just an unbelievable ball. Definitely the highlight of the game for me. But important to get off the winning start. But Dazzler, this Avenir Cup, I know the league here had kind of rescheduled things, refixed things, so that there'd be no league fixtures in the build-up to the Women's World Cup. And then this tournament came in. It's obviously a cross-border. It's kind of like an extended version of the Setanta Cup. What's your take on the thing as a whole?
Oh, look, it's great that there's football happening. Obviously, they had to make accommodations for the World Cup. Like playing friendlies or playing some kind of tournament during it probably was always on the agenda. I think to be able to have an all-Ireland flavour is important. It kind of makes it a little bit more meaningful, I guess, than just, you know, something else. I appreciate the efforts that have gone into it, because it's not an easy logistical challenge to do, to get the buy-in, obviously, from the North, the buy-in from the FAI and all the clubs. So from that side of things, you have to give credit to it. Like, the fact it's on LOI TV, most clubs streaming it, again, it's really important. I think it just shows, and we have to give them credit when they do well. And obviously, if they don't do well, they're capable of being scrutinized. But the FAI, to be fair, have been on top of things. They've pushed well on the promo of it. They've tried their best. Obviously, they'll be competing with the build-up to the World Cup, so it'll be trickier. But they deserve credit for trying to put together a positive competition. And look, getting a title sponsor on board is really helpful. I actually loved the old Setanta Cup. I thought it was a great addition, especially when the League Cup kind of lost its value. So I think it's an important one to have. I think it's a good tournament. It's funny you mention Athlone. They've actually had a bit of struggle. They've only announced tonight that their manager has left the club, said in personal circumstances. Tommy Hewitt has stepped aside. So he'd done a great job with them last year. Just goes to show, I guess, maybe the pressure that's on at that level now in the game.
Yeah, you're talking about the Setanta Cup there, Dazzler. Some of my best Shells memories are through that Setanta Cup. We had some great, great, great days in Setanta. Had one horrific one. I remember the final in Talca against Linfield. It was Union Jacks everywhere, even though we weren't allowed to display a tricolour up there. I do remember, but that's probably a little bit too political for this podcast. But anyway, I always remember the Glentoran massacre as well in Talca, where we absolutely hammered them, and they were a good team at the time. So hopefully, look, any exposure is good, exposure is positive. And as you say, LOI TV are on board and the games are being streamed, which just takes it up a notch, definitely. But Sean, from a player's point of view, like, there can be travel involved and that kind of thing. When you're at this stage of the season, would you rather have a couple of weeks to maybe rest the body a bit, or would you have been happy personally as a player to be playing in a tournament like it?
Yeah, I think in terms of if you're an ambitious player, you know, and you want to go on and push on, you want to play as much as you can. And these cups are great opportunities. Like, there'll be games that be very competitive. You know, Glentoran are a good side. Linfield have shown they've a bit about them as well. So it's great. It's better than just kind of, Darren said there, like, you know, when you get the WhatsApp text to say, oh, we're playing the boys' team on Thursday night, or, you know, we're playing against, I don't know, DLR on Saturday in a friendly, and you're going, oh, geez, fourth time this year. I think that's great. What will be really beneficial as well, if clubs can kind of give the opportunity to younger players, and that can be managed properly, you know, because it can be difficult. It can be a difficult league for younger players to get an opportunity in. And often, you know, we're seeing, you know, younger players get an opportunity at PML because there was a mass exodus there. You know, same at other clubs with DLR. But generally at clubs, it can be difficult for them to kind of bed in and you know, bring up those younger players. So cups like this are a great opportunity for that to happen. Once there's like some period of time where the players can get a bit of rest and have a bit of downtime, that's important too. But I like the idea of, with the World Cup happening and trying to kind of, you know, piggyback off the interest and engagement that will naturally happen, where people will go, oh, they've watched the match on a Thursday night or a Friday night, and they'll go, oh, that game's on in Tolka, will we go down and have a look? I think that's really important, and kudos to the FAI and the association up in Northern Ireland as well for you know, putting this together, because I do think both leagues will really benefit from it.
And our next fixture in the Avenir Cup is this Saturday. It's a 2 p.m. kickoff. It's live on LOI TV. We're home to Linfield. Sorry, the opposition is probably an important little fact to throw in there. Dazzler, I don't want to land yourself in it. Do you know the commentary team?
It's the Dream Team, Adam and Shauna.
It is. That's okay. I just didn't want to jump the gun and presume anything.
I hope it's the Dream Team.
Well, I'm going to get an answer.
Oh, here, I'm actually going to Portugal tomorrow. So Adam's going to have to pull in the substitute there for Saturday.
That's why, Shauna, you were saying it's time to give the younger people a chance. Yeah.
I know.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah. Look, I'm having my own pre-season break while I can.
You're dead right. It's going to be Adam and a commentator to be confirmed.
Okay, I asked the question now, Dazzler, isn't it?
Very lucky, because Adam told me it'd be himself and Shauna, so I'm just going to throw Adam under the bus there.
So now Adam is tasked with finding the replacement. So there we go. Big, big shoes to fill there. Before that game on Saturday, actually I should mention, the bar will be open on Saturday before the Linfield game. So get yourself down, have a few points.
Jessie's last game.
Yes,
so
of course.
She's going to be a superstar. She's going to have a brilliant career. It's a shame if she doesn't get to the World Cup, and it's not looking like it at this moment in time, barring any kind of last-minute injuries or hiccups. But she will definitely have her chance to play for Ireland on the grandest stage.
And before that game on Saturday, obviously there's a huge, huge game. They're all huge games this time of the season, but our men's team make the trip to Richmond Park for a huge Dublin derby against St. Pat's. Before we get into the football end of it, Dazzler, I do have to ask, who was the genius behind the certain tweet? And we all know the tweet that I'm talking about.
You should probably just say it for those who might not know it.
Oh, well, I was actually trying to give you the chance to take full credit for the tweet. But look, if you're not
It wasn't me. It was... It definitely wasn't me. It was workshopped quite a few people. It takes a village, as the fella says. But Pat's had a dig about your one on Love Island calling her Sherborne instead of Shelbourne. And we had a dig back about the fact that not registering their players properly is why they have 8 league titles instead of 9. And it seemed to go very viral, but it's not me. It was a few other people who came up with the execution.
And long may it continue, but on a serious note, it's a huge game. I mean, it's this time of the year. I mentioned it, I think, on the last podcast. Teams are in Europe now, and they've all gotten favourable draws in Europe as well. On paper, certainly they have. So this is crunch time now. I think you make a decision at this stage of, right, what are we doing here? Are we lingering around, you know, that kind of lower mid-table? We're not going to get relegated. We're not going to challenge for anything else. Or do you really push on, have a pop, and see if we can push for that European spot? Shauna, is a European spot realistic for the team at the moment, do you think?
I think if other results go our way, yeah. I think Duff probably knows himself he has to add a bit more depth to the squad for that to be realistic. Somebody like him, you know, he obviously doesn't get to the success that he's got in, gone to the places he's gone by kind of sitting on his hands and just, you know, accepting, you know, being on the bench or just being mid-table. He's had a lot of success, and I'm sure he's bringing that into every training session and every game. But, you know, when you look at the strength that the other teams have, the likes of Pats, you know, Dundalk, Rovers, you know, we do need a bit more depth in the squad, I think, but it's not, you know, beyond us as a team and a club. I think, you know, we have to start games a bit better, tighten up in areas, and as I said, you know, hope a few other results goes our way. But, you know, you have to dream about it, and you have to keep that in your vision, because none of us want to go and watch players that are just happy to be there and collect a wage. And in fairness to Duffy's, put together a very strong bunch of players, and I don't get that impression from any of the lads. I think they're all hungry, they all have that desire to go on and push on, not just for themselves but for the club. And you know, I'll be keeping my fingers crossed, and if anybody can get us there, I think we've got the best man in Ireland at the moment, and Damien Duff, to do it.
From a player's mind, Shauna, like, are you, when you're at this point of the season, are you looking at these games and, like, quietly among yourselves, are you saying, you know, this is a must win, we need to go out and win this game if we really want to push on? Or is it, you know, players will always give you the line, oh, we'll just take it, you know, one game at a time, and we'll just see where we end up. Is that the actual mentality, or is it a case of players are getting together and staff, and as a group, you're saying, these are the games we need to be winning if we're going to push on to the next level?
Yeah, definitely. I think as the league goes on and you start to get to this stage, you know, you can feel that tension a little bit more and the pressure, and that's great. You know, I firmly believe that can really help you focus as a team, players. And you know, I don't believe any players really like that in terms of, oh, just thinking about the next game. That's just the old spiel they give for the mics and the people watching. I do think, you know, that the lads will be putting in that bit of extra effort, if it's in recovery or if it's in analysis, to watch their opponent. You know, you can see it in the likes of Luke Bourne and the lads, the older lads especially. There's a real desire there. And yeah, I think if we can start off this end of the campaign on a win, it'll be really, really positive. You know, I think we have to get out of the traps quickly. And as I said, I think Duff will be the best man for that. I think he'll have the team kind of hungry and, you know, really, really ready to step into each game. He's not afraid to make changes. He's not afraid to take people off if they're not doing what he wants them to do or what they should be doing. And it's a very competitive environment to stay, and I think that's what you need at this stage of the season to push on. You need competition on your training ground, and you need a manager that's bringing that kind of motivation and enthusiasm and hunger to the setup.
How, like, again, this always fascinates me. We've heard, like, you've mentioned it there, and plenty of the players have mentioned it about the environment, and, you know, it's so competitive and the intensity levels. How does a manager get that across? Is it a demeanor thing? Is it just the way he talks to players, do you think? Like, what, have you had a manager in that mold that's just, you know, has you so switched on and intense all the time?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I've been fortunate enough to have a few. Emma Hayes over Arsenal. You know, but it's everything. It's not just when you turn up to the training ground. It's how you're communicating in a WhatsApp group. It's, you know, how you're expected to turn up in terms of kit, how you speak to each other. You know, the tone is set, like, well before you get to the training ground or to games. You know, there's structure in your weeks. Like, you know, I remember just, like, little things, like with Emma Hayes, like, she would assign people to be in charge of the equipment for training. And, like, if there was a ball that was, like, flat, like, you could have 20 footballs and one of them was soft or flat, like, it was just, that was it, like, the balls went away and you did your running. And you know, it was that kind of element of the expectation was there was a lot of self-reflection. We were kind of peer reviewing each other, which means, like, you were giving feedback to your teammates on their game and they were giving it back to you. And it was just kind of creating that, I suppose, high performance environment. But it was also, like, every single training session was competitive, no matter what we were doing, whether it was, like, you know, in the gym doing recovery sessions. You know, and Emma had it that way. You had Sean Marr as well at Shells, who was like that. And it was just kind of that hunger, like, you know, it was like, we want to win at everything. We don't just want to win by a result, but we want to win by how we turn up to a match, how we eat before the game, how we're training, and how we're speaking to each other. And, you know, I think as from being in England, obviously Duff would have, you know, learned that. And I do think that's the benefit. I think of having managers and players that go over there is they can bring that back, because sometimes there's elements of our league that we're still trying to get to that kind of level. And it's so important. And, you know, I can just imagine Duff, you know, when the lads are turning up every single session, instilling that in them, you know, whether they're going into like a jog, like be the best jogger, you know, if you're sitting in the dressing room, be the best at it. If you're, you know, just little things like that, that kind of constantly make you hungry and keep you competitive. And that's so important.
They're the fine margins, aren't they? Dazzler, Pats have had a number this year, unfortunately. What needs to change on Friday night? What do we need to do differently?
They have a very strong squad. Like they underperformed under Tim Clancy for the best part of a year, 18 months. I think a win over CSK, Sofia, and a decent league finish probably papered over a lot of cracks. Like I've said this to you, Doody, a few times, but the squad Pats have, like, they really should be competing for the league, I think. Particularly when you look at Derry, who still look like they have a bit of a soft underbelly. Bows are going to fall away. And Rovers, you know, as bad as their start to the season were, the fact that they probably are one of the oldest average squad ages in the league, they've still done enough to stay up and ahead of everyone else. So, like, it's I'm not surprised that Pats are improving. They've got a decent manager now. He's getting a tune. Like, they've very, very, very good players. Like, it's probably arguably Forrester's best year there in the last two or three seasons. Sam Curtis looks like, you know, he's going to have a brilliant career. He obviously got the goal the last time we played them. And they've quality all over the pitch. They're obviously strengthening goal. I think the keeper they brought in has been a big part to cementing them. Like, how do we have their number? Don't concede cheaply from a corner. Don't concede cheaply from a set piece. Probably try and gamble a bit more. Having Boydie back is going to be a big one. I think he's someone who will cause serious problems, ask questions. But you just never really know after a week of lads being on the beer who's going to turn up and what shape they'll be in.
Yeah, it actually, it's funny. Like I tweeted there, I think it was last night, since the longest international break I can remember. I don't know why it feels so long, but this nearly feels like the start of a second part of the season, kind of, because like that Sligo game seems so far gone. So it's kind of hard what to expect, even out of the squad, who's available, who's not. You've kind of nothing to really go off. One thing that was interesting on Instagram was the difference between the lads who are single and the lads who aren't on their holiday destinations and their carry-on on their holidays. But look, that's for another day. What I do want to mention, the five-a-side for Pride, Dazzler, unfortunately, you're going to be missing your centre-forward. And your long, gangly centre-half, Owen Smith, is not around either. But do you want to just talk us through what's happening in Talcott on Sunday?
Yeah, it's going to be brilliant. Before we do that, we're launching the Shells Rainbow Reds t-shirt. So that will be launched this week in Talcott. There's a photo shoot planned tomorrow. And it'll be on sale on Saturday for the Cup. And obviously, the Pride March, John McGarren is looking for people to take part in that. Obviously, ideally before the match. So get in touch with John if you'd like to march with the club in the Dublin Pride Parade on the Saturday. And yeah, then the five-a-side for Pride is taking place. All 16 teams locked and loaded. A lot of expectation on the Shell staff team with Joey O'Brien, Alan Quinn, David McAllister, Paul Skinner and Damien Duff. Stephen Mulhern's put together a decent squad, he tells me. He reckons that they will be a dark horse to make it all the way to the final. I'm predicting the Shells media team will get the wooden spoon, lose every single game. So I've got a bit desperate, Sean, and I've roped in some reinforcements. So I can confirm we've got Shero to play. So he might put a bit of respectability on the scoreline. But yeah, get down to Talca, support it if you can. When the Rainbow Reds t-shirt launches, the proceeds are going towards the LGBT Ireland helpline, which is really, really important. It's something SSE Air Tristy and the League of Ireland have been supporting. It's a vital resource for young people, people of all ages, really. So it's great that the club are able to do that. And fair play to the players and everyone in the background getting behind the club's support of the Pride Festival. It's the biggest ever program we've undertaken, between the t-shirt launch, marching in the parade, the five-a-side and the other elements. So it's a brilliant one to be a part of.
And folks, unfortunately, we're out of time. I'm after getting a little reminder on my screen here that I need to pay to upgrade to get more recording time, which I'm not in a position to do at the moment. So, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. Shauna, thank you so much for coming on, giving up your evening, and giving that ex-player insight, which is so, so important, and it just brings a total different dynamic to the pod. Thanks a million.
No worries, lads. Thanks for having me on again.
Dazzler, thank you for giving up your evening.
Cheers, Judy. Longest evening of the year, so plenty left.
Yes, up the Reds.
This podcast was brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. For all the latest sports news, visit otbsports.com. Rest in the sunset.